Okay. Those of you who know Dr. Hay, or knew of Dr. Hay, this may look familiar, although many times he only had one little bitty Bible. I don't know how you could read it. Anyway, so I got all kinds of Bibles here, and we'll talk about why we're going to do that here today. We're going to finish up the subject of the Godhead here today. And we have, of course, not covered it all in exhaustive detail, because if we did that, Andy would have lots of hair by the time we got done. So that's how long it would take. So, but we do want to just cover this and sort of conclude it, because I also realize this is a subject that, even though interesting and you notice the truth, it can be a bit dry. And so we'll try not to drag it on and on and on. Now, we will have this material, I hope, to get it done, put on our site, or somehow I'd rather get these things put on the site so you can look it over. And we want to have them permanently placed on our site so that anybody new, or if you want to go back and go over it again, you can do that and so forth. So, okay. So let's go ahead and start here with that first. I hope you can see that. If you can't see my daughter, she said these would be good colors to see. So hopefully you can see all that even over Skype. So we're going to get a new bulb, which I think will help brighten things up here too. Translations matter. When we talk about Godhead or any other doctrine, they matter. You might look and see what translation you have. And I've got several here. I forgot one other Bible. It has four different translations in it and so forth. But it's this thick. Now, wait a minute. That big, that thick. Not that thick. Just for the Gospels. So it's quite thick because it's four different versions altogether. Which translations are the most dependable? And these are important things that you need to understand about various translations. I have here the Old King James and the parallel. Have the Old King James and the New Living Translation. Now, you talk about opposites. These are opposites. But I like to have the Old King James, or if it had New King James, I'd like to see that too. Oh, and, you know, the King James here, and then its equivalent for the New Living Translation, because the New Living Translation, we're talking about this a little bit, is like a paraphrase. The Titanic, she was a huge ship, displaced 250,000 tons of water at top cruising speed. It was da-da-da, and it was this da-da-da-da-da. Paraphrase, the Titanic was a massive ship. Okay, so a paraphrase is not a word for word. It's sort of, they try to capture the thought and then give it to you. And sometimes that's great. Because if you know what the King James says, for example, and you go back, and maybe you've heard a verse in the King James over and over and over and over, and then you hear a paraphrase, oh, you hadn't thought of just kind of that little nuance. It doesn't change the doctrine necessarily, but anyway, it's important. And again, when we talk about the Godhead, it's important that we know what translation we're reading from, because there's a history to the various translations. And I'm not going to get into all of that, but most of you, if you have the King James Version, they have the introductory part. You can read that. If you don't have a lot of technical background, which most of us don't, a lot of this is kind of gibberish, but it'd still be good to read. So let's go to the next frame, and we'll... There are significant differences in translation. And again, here are a few verses which had very significant differences related to Jesus Christ as God. Now, why is that important? We just covered the Godhead. We know that Jesus is part of the Godhead, that He was the pre-incarnate being of the God family. He became flesh and dwelt among us, and now He's resurrected and He's back with His Father. As He said, He was looking forward to enjoying the glory that He had with His Father at that one time. However, not all translations read that, because translators have biases. They have biases. And a lot of these modern translations, like the New Living, the NIV, if you have the NIV. Okay, if you're going to read the NIV, have your King James with you. Because the NIV is not real dependable. So now you just say, I just bought an NIV for $50,000, and now you tell me this. Okay. But, now, I got an NIV somewhere in this mess. Somewhere. Maybe this is it. Yeah, right here. This is the NIV. study Bible, and I'll show you a few things where the biases come out. But before we do that, we'll say it's important. Remember Arius, the Arian controversy? You say, why do I need to know all this old stuff? Because that controversy is now in the Church of God, in various branches of it, where they now believe that Jesus was a created being. And they say, well, so what? You know, I know you don't say that, but for argument's sake, let's say, well, so what? What's the big deal? If you do that, then you are just cutting out the heart of Christianity. You're cutting out the heart of Christianity. Well, don't they believe in Jesus? Well, yeah, they may. But when you really dig into it, you're just saying he was just a created being, maybe like a really nice angel, a really good angel. And when he died, how does that cover our sins? See? But anyway, the point is, it does matter. Now, we're going to cover basically seven verses today, which are different due to which the Greek family of manuscripts, there's all kinds of different groupings of manuscripts, and it can be bewildering after a while. So we're not going to get into all that detail. But some of these new translations actually diminish the notion that Jesus is God and that he was God. Like in John, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and he dwelt among us, and so forth. And then verse 14, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and then it even talks about his name, Emmanuel, God with us. And these new translations subtly... So like they come creeping unawares kind of principle. Subtly they come in changing it. Now, one point, as I understand it, at one point the Arian view was almost accepted in traditional Christianity. Almost accepted. And then the Council of Nicaea came along, and that was changed for all kinds of different reasons. And it got to be really, really nasty. Okay, as far as persecution and so forth. All right, let's go to the next one here. Can you see that? I realize it's probably going to be kind of hard to see it, but I thought I liked the graphic too. It was in the Virtual Christian, I think it is, magazine. And you have the whole spectrum, the interlinear, the New American Standard Bible. These are word for word. And you have the all these English. So as you move this way, King James, the New King James, is right in here, which tries to be more of a word for word. We have the American Standard Bible. That would be here. The Amplified Bible is here. English Standard and so forth. Then you move over to you get way over here to where you get, for example, the Living Bible. See, the New Living Bible, that's way over here. The Titanic was a great big ship. Okay? Well, over here in the King James, I'd want to describe to you word for word, boy, it displaced this much weight, it had this many motors, it had this many propellers, it could produce this much horsepower. That's what I'm saying, it gives you so much more detail. These on this end of the spectrum are more paraphrased. Okay, so I hope you can understand. And I realize you can't see all that, but if you go to it's on the internet, and you can look at the types of Bible translations. Now, in every one of these translations, there are errors. Okay? Because you have human beings who are imperfect, and they're trying to do a good job. But there's going to be errors in them. But the truth of God isn't lost. It's just that human beings are not perfect, and they try their best wherever they're at in this spectrum. I think most of them do. If they have a fear of God in any way, or even just a respect for the language. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw that up there for you. We'll see it a little bit later as we go through. But there's a huge spectrum. You go to a Bible bookstore, it isn't just, oh, there's a Bible, I'll buy that one. You need to wait a minute now. What's some of the history behind this and what happens? All right, let's go to the next one here. The divinity of Christ in ancient manuscripts. They're in there. We will be talking a little bit about that as we go through here. Actually, it's going to be a lot about that. About how there's a movement now with the modern translations to move away from that. And it's pretty much people don't even know it's happening. All right? That's my best picture of Arius. There's not too many pictures of him, you know, even color or black and white. Anyway, nonetheless. And he was from Alexandria,
It is right here. Kind of a busy screen, but nonetheless. And he was an extremely brilliant man, very persuasive, and he believed that Jesus was a created being. And he just about got it into what is known as today to be the Catholic Church. But is that me making that noise? I mean, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't, you know. So, anyway. We'll wait for him just a second. Now, is that okay? All right, let's go on to the next one. Byzantine or Byzantine, however you want to say it. Is it Byzantine or Byzantine? Byzantine, tomato, tomato, whatever you want. Okay. The largest majority of text manuscripts are from here, but only used for a small number of English New Testaments, like the New King James. Okay. And I'm not going to get into all this detail. You know, some folks, they love it. They get into it. You need to have folks like this who study this. Now, Antioch, just interesting, to Acts 11:26. So let's go there. Acts 11. How about that? I turned right to it. Acts 11, verse 25. Then Barnabas and Tarsus looked to Saul, and when they found him, he brought them to Antioch. So for a whole year, Barnabas and Saul met with the church. This is from the NIV. And taught them great numbers of people. The disciples were called Christians first at Antioch. And it was really here where this whole concept began to develop. All right, let's move on to the next one. We don't have a lot of material, but we want to cover it as closely as we can. And again, the whole idea here, again, is to show you, and I realize this is kind of a Bible study / sermon, but the subject just lends itself to that. There's six verses that are important to understand the divinity of Christ. And I'll show you in 1 John as we get there later on. Those warnings are in there for the end time. You know, these things, as it says in Corinthians, these things have been written upon whom the ends of the age would come. And so we're seeing this thing. You could go, don't do it, but you could go to the bookstore in town and buy the Gnostic Gospels now. The Gospel of Thomas, Gospel of Judas, and so forth. And Judas in that Gospel is painted as the victim of that, who really was a friend with Jesus. And Jesus needed to get attention to his ministry, and he told Judas to do his little thing, and it got out of hand, and that's what happened. And Judas really is a good guy. There's some other, and these spurious Gospels didn't even make it into the Catholic apocryphal writings. Only a handful of them did. There were thousands of them, I guess. I know hundreds, but maybe perhaps more of these writings that were out there. So anyway, we want to see the differences in wording can, one, be influenced by established belief. You know, let's face it, sometimes we do that. In the church, we try to be honest, we try to be straightforward, and we read the scripture, but sometimes we look back a little years later and say, I think we misapplied that. Okay, we misapplied that. Several different things. You know, you could quote scriptures about makeup on, makeup off. Then make up off, then make up on. Remember those days, those of you who've been around a long time? And we could quote scripture, but what was happening was, just to be frank about it, Mr. Armstrong lived in an era where the only women, really, respectable women, never wore makeup. They were the harlots who would wear the makeup. Okay, most women didn't care that, so working too hard. They didn't care about that. And so that does affect us. You know, who we are, the environment we were raised in, those things affect us. And so it's on and off and on and off and on and off. And just nothing else to test the attitude. So anyway. We can be influenced. So translators can be influenced. If they're convicted that Jesus was not a member of the Godhead, when they translate it and if there's a question, they're going to go with that bias. And the other side could be too. Maybe there's something, they have a bias that he is in the Godhead, which we would agree with. And they would go with that bias. Is it getting cold to anybody? I turned it down to 69 because it was hot.
Okay, who's hot today? Who are the converted ones? Thank you. All right. These things are working, aren't they? You guys are learning the tricks. Okay. So anyway, number two, you can creep in unawares to the reader. And I'm going to show you, if you have an NIV, you may not want it after today. I'm trying to remember, I didn't write it down, there's something like several hundred, can you help me with that, Andy? Several hundred verses in the King James that are not in the NIV. Actually just edited them out. Yeah, I don't remember either, but there's a lot of them. They were edited out because, well, sometimes they're not politically correct. We're really into that. If you ever get your hands on a politically correct Bible, boy, it'll curl your hair. And the two shall become one flesh, and the him and the her, no, they have other terms. Anyway, whatever. And number three, then there's the more reliable translations, and we'll talk about that. All right, let's move on. All right, let's take a look at our first one, 1 Timothy 3:16. Let's go there. 1 Timothy 3:16, I'll read it from the King James, and I'll read it from some other Bibles, and see. 1 Timothy. Now, sometimes, like I say, you can go and find a verse in these other translations, and it just kind of, oh, you know, that just kind of helps put a little pizzazz to it, and I understand that. And we sometimes quote those. But you have to be careful that they don't change the meaning, or there's not something there subtle. Okay, 1 Timothy 3:16 from the King James Version. This is the old King James Version. Without controversy, let's see, I got this right, 3:16. 3:16. Without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifest in the flesh, justified in the spirit, seen of angels, preached unto the Gentiles, believed in the world, received up to glory. Now, here's what it says in the... Remember we had that spectrum? The New Living Translation? And here its translation is. Without question, this is the great mystery of our faith. Christ appeared in the flesh, was shown to be righteous by the Spirit. He was seen by angels and was announced to the nations, and he was believed on in the world and was taken up into heaven. Okay. Something very different here. God was manifest in the flesh, this is in the King James. And yet now this is the New American Standard Bible, and I don't have that one here, but we have the quote. This is an Alexandrian text from Egypt. Now, Alexandria is, of course, in Egypt, and that was sort of the center of Gnosticism, Gnostic thought of the time. Now, do you think that that would influence the translators? Of course it would. And so, when they would read that, and Arius was very much accepted in that part of the world, too. Remember, he's from Egypt, Alexandria. So the Alexandria Egypt text reads this. This is how their text reads. He who was revealed in the flesh. What that is, it says it obscures the divinity of Christ. Okay. He who is revealed in the flesh, as opposed to, and without controversy, great is the mystery of God. God is manifest in the flesh. Manifest. Very, very different emphasis. Again, you say, well, that's kind of no big deal. Why do we just harp on that? Well, it's not the only place this kind of thing happens. It's just very subtle change in wording. So if you're ever reading a New American Standard Bible, the New Living Translation, there's a called the Good News Bible. Okay. probably... There's a paraphrase, and I think that's kind of a paraphrase of a paraphrase. That's just me. So, if you want to read it, fine, but you never want to use these, the New Living, the ones that were on this side of the spectrum from the Alexandrian school, you don't want to read them to learn doctrine because they're not dependable. You might want to read a verse or two to get a thought, but just here they changed that. This is just very subtle, but they changed that. Let's look at another one here. Okay, this is the Byzantine text, and Ignatius of Syria, Antioch, student of the Apostle John. And he's also contemporary with Polycarp. And Polycarp, as I remember right, was also a student of John. At least that's what we do, that's been taught for years. So these two were taught by John, same generation, knew him, the Apostle John, in the late 1st, 2nd century. And they used the proper term here, as it says in the King James. And without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifest in flesh. What is that saying? God was manifest in the flesh. Jesus was God when he was in the flesh, and manifest maybe made it plain. But these other translations just say, wait, can we go back just one screen? It teaches he was revealed in the flesh. Revealed? You know, some say he only appeared like he came in the flesh. It goes back to that Gnostic view. All right, let's move on. I'm going to try this Hippolytus, whatever, of Rome, student of Irenaeus, who studied under Polycarp. So now you have John, who taught Polycarp, and this other Ignatius. And in the next generation of teachers, Hippolytus, he was taught by Polycarp, who was taught by John. And here's what. So now we're moving on with that. Let's move ahead. So these people taught these things and were faithful in doing that. Now here's another verse that is misunderstood. Let's go to Mark 1. So again, that one verse is very important. God was manifested in the flesh. If any spirits, as it says in John, if the spirit of Antichrist is who denies that Christ came in the flesh. We'll get into that in a minute. This is so important. I know it's a little dry, maybe, and I guess I shouldn't apologize for that. But it's important that you are prepared when this comes. And it's coming. It's going to come probably from the churches of the world. I don't know the mechanisms, because I'm no prophet, but it will come. Because I will show you that. I don't want to get ahead of myself. Mark. Let's go to Mark. Mark 1. Now let me read it to you from the New Living Translation, and you read it from my, if you have a, whatever translation you have. Here's the New Living. Here begins the good news about Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God. Okay? Now that, they got that right there, as far as mentioning the Son of God. However, in this case, many other than these other translations that are very, very on the iffy side that we've talked about, says that they omitted it from 1% of the manuscripts later as a small, undated correction. Let me see if I can find. Just a second, I've got to get Mark here. Mark 1. This isn't on its face really big, but it's when you look at it all together. This is the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Then there's a footnote says some manuscripts do not have Son of God in it. So this is how many manuscripts read. The beginning of the gospel about Jesus. They stop right there. It's not just about Jesus the person. And it wasn't just about Jesus the person who appeared in the flesh or appeared to come in the flesh as we've seen in the other. No, but he was the Son of God, who was God made manifest in the flesh. But when you take that and twist it just a couple little words, and depending on what translation you have, you read right over it and you won't even know it. But it's there. Okay, so again, this is very important. Let's go to the next one. Again, there's only like 1% would argue that you should take it out. These two guys called Westcott and Hort omitted it from their edition of the New Testament. So only 1% didn't have it in there, a little less than 1%. And they have in their Bible, this for the Jehovah's Witnesses, they use that translation that takes that out. Not all do, of course, but many, many do. And again, this obscures the divinity of Christ. It's just amazing how history repeats itself. That's why you know it's going to happen again. History just keeps repeating itself. It had different names, different dates, different culture kind of thing, but it keeps repeating itself. This is important. These things are trying to obscure the deity of Christ. And I hope that one day you'll say, this is why we had to endure 3 sermons on this subject. Okay? Because he's, you know, I'm not going to equate myself to Mr. Armstrong, but Mr. Armstrong said, we're going to go back to the garden. Back to the garden. 2 trees. Well, okay, guess what? We didn't understand it. See? All right, so be always on lookout. If you have another translation, keep your King James there. Because it's not perfect. It's not perfect, but it's a good. New King James is good too. All right, let's move on. Omitting one word can change the meaning. Just one word. Now, I was in the journalism school at one point, 1,000 years ago, and I can make anybody say anything I want them to say. You know, just by changing one or two little words in a phrase, emphasizing something, just change it just a little bit. Like, for example, Jude 1:4. Let's go to there, Jude 1:4, and I'll be reading. Here's what it says in the New Living Translation. This letter is from Jude, the slave of Jesus Christ, and the brother of James. Here's what the King James reads, if you don't have that in front of you. Jude, the servant of Jesus Christ and brother of James, to them that are sanctified by God the Father and preserved in Jesus Christ and called. The New Living just took all that out. Because they didn't want to have that. This is another translation. What's a C? What's the Y? What's that stand for? Something literal translation. Young. There's so many. Okay. Young's translation. And our glory only Master God and Lord Jesus Christ. Now the Alexandrian text omits the word God again. Because they, when they translated their text, they had their text, they didn't believe that Jesus was God. Now, what happens now, centuries have come and gone, and these new translations are coming out, and they're leaving those omissions in. See, they're leaving those omissions in, and most of us don't have this kind of background to study, just don't have it. But there are those who do, and they help us to see that. But you must, I hope you listen to me, you must know that that movement is coming. I don't know the mechanism. I don't know. It's going to come somewhere. And we need to be ready. If we deny that Christ came in the flesh, we deny our Savior. It's that serious. See, all Christianity is really based upon those things. So if nothing else, when you go to buy a Bible, maybe the first thing you should do is look in the front. Before Genesis 1, most of that's in the front. And read a little bit about, okay, where did this come from? If they say, Alexandrian text, okay, be careful. If it says the Byzantine or Byzantine text, then okay. Now, are all those perfect? No. So you might want to have one of each to compare. All right, let's go to the next one. Again, these things are all designed to do that. What does the translation say? Now, Colossians is an amazing book. Okay, Colossians. And let me just start in Colossians 2, verse 1. We'll get down here and read verse 1 and 2. For I would that you have... let me try that again. For I would that you knew what great conflict I have for you and for them at Laodicea, and for as many as have not seen my face in the flesh, that their hearts might be comforted, being knit together in love, and unto the all riches and full assurance and understanding to the knowledge of the mystery of God and of the Father and of Christ, in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Okay? The fullness and understanding of the knowledge. Okay? The mystery. Now, this is from the New King James. They got it again. New King James puts a little bit in modern English, but it doesn't change the meaning. Alexandrian text omits, takes out both the Father and. That word's not in there. They don't have it in there. So they take out the Father, see, both the Father and. It changes the meaning. The fullness assurance of understanding of the knowledge of God. Then leave out and of Christ. So that's how it would read. The full assurance of the understanding of the knowledge of the mystery of God and of Christ. Again, the whole idea is that it obscures again. Alexandrian text, again, obscuring the individuality of the Father and the Son, who are both God. Okay, next. Hebrews 1:9. These are verses you need to have in mind. I hope you will when you go look for a Bible. And you look and you have King James and whatever translation you have. One of my favorite ones was Matthew. One of my favorite ones, and I forgot. Matthew 28, early on Sunday morning, they'll have. No, early on the first day of the week. Because you say, well, what's the day? It wasn't a Sunday morning. But see, it's taking privileges that they shouldn't have as translators. What did it say? And that's why it's so important that the translations be as faithful as they can. Because once you start going off, you can just keep going. It may not be a deliberate thing by a lot of folks, but it still is there. Okay, Hebrews 1. This is the King James. You have loved righteousness and hated iniquity. Therefore God, even thy God, has anointed thee with oil of gladness above your fellows. Let's just go back up a little bit here in verse 8. But unto the Son he said, thy throne, O God. Who's saying who? The Father is saying to the Son, your throne. Okay? Let's just back up another verse. And the angels said, and to the angels he says, who made his angels spirits and ministers of flame of fire. But unto the Son, he, that's the Father speaking, unto the Son he said, thy throne, O God, is forever and ever a scepter of righteousness and a scepter of your kingdom. The Father is witnessing that Jesus is God. Now, if you have that view that the translators, these others have, not all of them, of course, but some do, that Jesus isn't God, then this is how it comes out. God, your God, has anointed you. What? It loses its power. See? And again, they quote, we've talked about this verse before, the Lord said unto my Lord, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool, sort of a paraphrase there. And again, Hebrews 1:9 really confirms two beings of the Godhead. Really confirms two beings in the Godhead. This is an important verse when you look at a Bible. These are important verses maybe you need to memorize in your mind. I need to remember what Hebrews 1:9, I need to Colossians 2:2. And when I look those things up and be ready to give an answer for the hope that's within you. Because it's going to come. I don't know the how, when, where, or how, or what. I don't know that. But and again, if you read the material we have on Who is God, that's an extremely good book. Well written, I think, and covers this whole subject that we've been talking about in good detail. All right, next. Translations are important. 1 John 4:3. Let's go to that. This is really what I've been referring to. 1 John 4. And I'll read King James, and every spirit that confesses not that Jesus has come in the flesh is not of God. Have I not been showing you that some of these translations are of that spirit? They really are. So be careful about what translations you use. I know you know the doctrine, and when you read right some of those other verses, it doesn't. You don't go, oh, I don't think Jesus is the Son of God. No, you don't, because you know the doctrine. But you have to be aware, though, that folks, someday, somewhere, again, the mechanism I don't know, are going to challenge us on that. And then you need to be able to say, well, you're doing Alexandrian philosophy. I'm of the Byzantine school. And I read it. Probably go, what? But anyway, yeah, that's important. This is that modern translation. Every spirit that does not confess that Jesus is in the... Every spirit that does not confess Jesus in the flesh, having come of God, is not. A little confusing. Alexandrian admits, says here, Alexandrian text of this verse, they take out Christ in the flesh having come from the verse. That in itself is a fulfillment of that verse. See? That is a fulfillment of that verse. Again, prognostic separation of the human. There was Jesus, the man, and Christ, the spirit being. And they say, again, there's all kinds of schools of thought on this, but one of the schools was that Jesus was a really nice spiritual man, you know, spiritual in his thinking, but he was a man. And the spiritual Jesus, did I get that right? Jesus was a nice guy, and spiritual Christ, the spirit of Christ entered into him and lived his life and did the miracles. And so forth. And then when the man Jesus was on the cross, the spirit Christ left him, and then Jesus says, why have you forsaken me? Okay. Again, translations are important. The idea you can't have Christ in the flesh is, again, the Apocalypse of Peter. That's another one of those extra books that the Catholics even rejected it. I did a little study on that. The author of the Apocalypse of Peter believe that, for example, a liar would be hung in hell by his tongue over a cauldron. And adulteresses, I don't know what they do with adulterers, but adulteresses would be hung by their hair forever over a cauldron. Nice fella. Burning forever. And lots of other really weird things. Everybody in heaven would be kind of a pale white. So forth and so on and so forth. So I guess they don't have sun. Never mind. Anyway, this Gnostic concept that flesh is evil and spirit is good. So Jesus could not be the Son of God, was spirit, became flesh and dwelt among us. No, it only seemed like he did. And that, believe it or not, I have friends I went to college with who believe that. And preach it in their little churches. Now the word confess, I'm going to try the Hebrew, Greek here, homoligo, so one message meaning saying the same thing. I guess there's a little different ways of saying it. That God says about Jesus coming in the flesh. Again, confess. If you confess it, it means that you are say the same thing that God says. I hope that makes sense. All right, let's go on to the next. There's three types of translations. We talked about this a little bit here. There are three main types of Bibles: the word for word, thought for thought, and paraphrase. Remember, and that would be on that spectrum that we've been talking about. That spectrum: the word for word, the King James, the New King James, and some of those others. A word for word translation attempts to translate each Hebrew or Greek word into a corresponding English word, and that's not easy. Because there are concepts that we don't have and concepts that they didn't have. And so you have to try to figure out how do you do that without changing the meaning. It's a huge task to properly translate. And then when you try other languages, and it's just something simple. I'm trying to remember where I read that. There's still some problem with it. There's people who live on these little islands out in the Pacific. And the Bible talks about Jesus went into the desert. Huh? What's desert? Is that something you eat after dinner? Yeah. What's desert? So they have to do the best they can without trying to change it. Change the meaning. He went into a very dry place. And we'd read that and go, oh, we get horrified. But you have to try to fit it. So it means something. Because if you don't know what a desert is, what's a desert? He went to the desert. Great. What's that? See? Anyway, however, some consider word-for-word translation harder to understand, particularly when it comes to figures of speech that are not used in modern culture. When I look at Lisa and I say, when I look at you, my bowels move with excitement. Well, that had one meaning 2,000 years ago. It has another meaning with Pepto-Bismol today. Okay. So, it's hard. Sorry. But that's just an example of it. I don't mean to be gross. Okay. But that's it talks about that. Okay. I was watching an old movie from the 40s the other day, just a little scene of it, and I thought, oh, how things have changed. One, the ladies were wearing those great big hats, crooked, you know, about 1940s style. And she says, "And I'm just so gay to be here today." I'm thinking how the word has changed, hasn't it? So all these things, cultures change. All right, so words mean something. Two examples of word-for-word translation are the King James Version and the New King James. That's why the church has traditionally said that's the one to lean on and to look to. And if you want to use some other translation, keep your King James with you. Again, King James isn't perfect. None of them are. But I remember some of the first things I taught was get various translations. And if most of the translations come out basically with the same thing, you're going to be pretty safe. Going to be pretty safe. All right. There's that picture again. From way over here to word for word. The interlinear, boy, that is word for word. Okay? I got one. It's over my head. Okay, I mean, it is technical, right? See? And I'm not smart enough for that. Then all the way over here to, you know, the message. Okay. So if you read the message, you need to have a King James right next to you, because I guarantee you, you're going to get things that aren't right. So it's important. The translation you use is important. It is important. Because there's that move to water things down all the time. All right, let's go to the next. New International Version. I got that here. The thought-for-thought translations seek to express the meaning of each sentence or paragraph from the original language is simply a simple up-to-date English without being tied to translating every word. Again, a paraphrase. Titanic was a great big ship, man. Well, the King James would try to give you exactly word for word as it was in the original. These types of translations should not be exclusively relied on for doctrinal study. Again, we've taught that many years in the church. The New International Version is perhaps the most well-known of the thought-for-thought translations, but it doesn't mean it's the best. Everybody has one, most likely. I've got several. And I now have a comeback for when I buy yet another Bible, which I don't need, from my wife. And I said, well, let's go look in the closet and see how many shoes you have. Because Robert taught me that. All right, next. Easy to understand, but, you know, wow. A paraphrase translation has the primary goal of conveying the Bible in simple, easy to understand language without regard to word for word or even thought to thought expressions of the original language. So that when you're reading some of these paraphrases, the Good News Bible, the Message Bible, even the, not to the same degree, but the New Living Bible, remember now, they can take this as poetic license with it, leaving a great room for personal religious ideas. See that? Again, every man doing what's right in his own eyes, that concept. It says right here in my Bible. See? All right. Next. King James or New King James, really. And this is from the article that came out of Virtual Christian Magazine. One of the latest ones. The United Church of God has published Vertical Thought, well, it's right there in front of me, uses the New King James Version as a standard English language translation. We recommend this as a good all-around translation for everyday use. Thought-for-thought translations can be good secondary sources for simply reading God's Word or for rounding out understanding of Scripture. The truth is, all Bible translations contain some human error, so it's best to use several versions and study. I remember that's one of the first things I learned when I first came in. Okay? So, you know, whatever translation you have, we will check you at the door. If you don't have a King James or a New King James, it will cost you $20 or some ice cream tonight. That's a joke for those of you listening over the internet. It'll cost them $15.
All right, let's go to the next one. It matters what translation you use. Again, in our concept here, because that's what we've been talking about, because there is a subtle attack against the Godhead. And you can do it on the Sabbath, all these things too. And so that's why I want to go over this subject with you. We haven't touched a lot of material because we don't have time. But a lot of this material, these are the concepts you need to remember. I hope you really, 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 when you go to the Bible bookstore, take it seriously. What translation do I have? What school? Is it Byzantine or is it Alexandrian? And I would recommend Byzantine and not the Alexandrian. And if you do get the Alexandrian, get a good Byzantine so you can compare. So it is very important what translation you have. Okay. Next. That's it. Memorize that screen and you'll be safe. You will go into the abyss. All right. Well, that concludes it. Next time we'll talk about something that isn't quite so heady, but still basic doctrines. I thought it was very important we get into this to this depth. And hopefully you found it beneficial. All right.